Hey everybody, it's Kat, and I want to welcome you to this episode of Backstory Sessions. I'm joined today by my co-host, Matt. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Kat. Hey, everyone. How are you?
Well, here we are back for season 12.
Is it 12 or 13?
12, okay. I think.
All right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it could be 13, but I really believe it's 12.
All right, I'm gonna have to look because, you know, I can't remember anymore.
There's been so many. Well, it seems like I've been saying 12, so yeah.
It is 12 actually.
Woo! Yeah. I mean, 13 would be great too because, you know.
Well, could be lucky or unlucky depending.
Well, I mean, it would be one more season we were starting, so that would be lucky.
That is true.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that we don't know which season we're starting is like...
Yeah, we're off to a great start. Well, at any rate, we do need to say Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
Yes, we do. Happy Mother's Day. Because, you know, I think that is like the day of the most, like everything, flowers and cards and, you know.
Yes, it is a big flower card and a candy day, I assume.
Yeah, bigger than Valentine's. I mean, I think it's the biggest.
No, I don't know. They're probably pretty close.
I don't know. I think Mother's Day wins out, you know, because really everybody, you know, has a mother at one point and sometimes more than one. But
yes, you know, but how many Valentines do they have over the course of their life?
Well, I mean, it depends. You know, like if people are committed, they should only have that one, you right. know. I mean, and not everyone, you know, even has a Valentine's person, although not everybody has a mom either. But, you know, it still is, I believe, the most cards, even above Christmas, which, you know, that's another topic, but I don't really think people send Christmas cards much anymore. So,
well, we'll have to dig into that and maybe we'll talk about it at the beginning of the next episode when I have time to look it up.
Yeah. So right now we'll just say Happy Mother's Day and hope that all the moms out there get something meaningful to them, you know, for all the hard work that they have done.
Yes, and all the aggravation I have to put up with.
Exactly. You know, it's going to take a lot of flowers and cards and such to, like, equal that out.
Yeah. Well, you know, some kids are just worse than others, apparently, so.
Yeah. Yes, like, you know, my mom would say that I was difficult compared to my brother, but, well, you know, I was the only child for 6 years and so almost seven. And
who's counting?
I think just, you know, you have to be kind of independent and strong-willed when you're the only one. And
so yeah, and then the little brother comes along and ruins everything, and you're not the focus of attention anymore. And
yes, and you spend the rest of your life trying to get the attention back. And, you know, it's like, I've come to know that you just have to forget it.
All right. Well, there you have it. Wise words.
Thanks, brother.
All right. What else we got going on?
Well, we got an exciting guest today to start this season off. I mean, really, it's pretty incredible to start a season 12 with our third Walton.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so we had, I think we had Mary Ellen first.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
And then we had Michael Learned, so Mama Walton.
Yeah.
We should have, you know, she would have been a great Mother's Day guest.
Yeah.
And then, you know, today we have the youngest Walton, Olivia. Olivia, Elizabeth. Olivia.
So close.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Elizabeth, yeah. And, you know, she's a favorite, Walton, of many people, because she was so young and really cute, you know, with that red hair. And
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to top that. And so she just had a sweet personality. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to talk to her, I think, because, you know, we can compare in our minds, at least, like, the perspective of Mary Ellen, who was, you know, older, and what her memories of the Waltons were compared to Elizabeth's.
Yep, that'll be interesting to hear for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, before we get started with the episode, a little more business type things. The website, that's coming along. I'm not sure if it, you know, I got to see if it's going to be ready by tomorrow, but there may be something there for you to look at, but I don't know if it'll be 100% complete. We ran into a couple small issues, but yeah, so that's coming very, very soon. I'm excited about that. And we did talk about t-shirts, and we're mulling that over. We'll have more news on that in the very near future. And what else? What am I forgetting?
The new intro music.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
People may have noticed as they are, you know, beginning to listen to this episode. I'm sure they're like, hey, where's the music that we're...
Well, I took the music out for the last few episodes, so...
Yeah, that is true. So they're probably like, what is this ad that's playing?
Right.
Yeah, seriously. There's, you know, all of that happening. And since we're talking about business a little bit, you know, the Tri-County Mystery Meets, and we did our pitch. And
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That was a big moment to talk about. You know, I was looking forward to when last season ended. And, you know, we did our thing and it went well. And in the end, you know, we did not win. But we had a good showing, I feel like, so.
Yeah, even though you didn't place in the top three, I think there were some good things that came out of it, you know, some opportunities for you, and
yeah, and
you got to see me, because I actually drove down there to see it.
I know, and really, you know, that is its own reward
right there. Right, I mean, it goes without saying.
So. Yeah. Bigger trophy than the ones that they gave out. So,
which, you know, I was envisioning some massive, like, you know, 3 foot tall trophy, and it was not.
No, I will say that, you know, perspective sometimes is, you know, a little bit different than reality.
Right, yeah. Perspective versus reality. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, since you're saying that, that reminds me, you know, the Northern Lights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing right now.
Yeah, very big. And I've been trying to see them because everybody around me, you know, my Facebook feed has been like photo after photo of everyone seeing it and them. And, you know, I tried, like, when I started seeing people posting, you know, I'm like, oh, I must go. You know, because I wanted to see the lights. And mm-hmm. I mean, I kept staying out there till after midnight, and I never could. So I just came back in. But, you know, now I'm learning that we have another opportunity possibly tonight, and that you need to use your cell phone in order to, like, put it on the camera on the night mode. And, find the north.
You see him that way. I guess that makes
sense. Yeah. So it's like, could have been there last night. I'm sure it was. And
you're just sitting out there with the coyotes.
Yeah, it's with the coyotes. And, you know, we're all waiting. And I guess they didn't have a cell phone either, because everybody just went there. You know, way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some interesting theories going on about, you know, the Northern Lights as could be signifying the end of the world and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I did post a poll because, you know, I'm curious to see what the listeners are thinking about, you know, the possibilities that maybe the election is being, you know, ballots are being secretly dispersed.
Wasn't that the, like, wasn't, so there was, like, the Starlink satellites or something were visible or something?
Yes, so it is. It's Elon Starlink, and people were waiting for the lights, and the Starlink came through. So you know, that did like get everyone really scared.
Where do you live? Like, I mean, people are scared of like a satellite.
Well, I mean, I didn't see any of it, so.
Well, yeah, of course. Scared.
But I mean, if I did see it, I would not think election ballots.
Yeah, and so I guess the theory is that somehow the Starlink satellites are dispersing ballots for the election, the upcoming presidential election. And
Well, and another one is to circumvent, you know, Tennessee, the neighboring state has, and there are other states already too, that have put this legislation about, you know, banning chemtrails and.
Yes, chemical manipulation of the atmosphere is what they're banning. And, you know, when a lot of people say when you look up in the sky and you see the, like those lines going across the sky.
Right.
Yeah. Then which are caused by airplanes flying at high altitude. And
well, so you say.
Right. Yeah. But some people think it's the they're seeding the atmosphere somehow and
with chemicals, obviously. Yeah, chemtrails.
Right. To make people stupid or something. I don't know.
Well, also the weather, you know, to affect the weather.
Right.
They really manipulate a lot of things there. So, you know, some people think that's what was going on too.
Right. Like so Tennessee has banned that, and people feel that this is the way that they're sort of getting around that ban.
Yeah. And, you know, the end of the world, as you were saying.
Right. Yeah.
That's, I mean, I would think that they probably now have reconsidered that since we're still here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's still a chance of seeing them tonight. Is that not true?
Oh, well, but I don't think the Starlink is, well, who knows? I mean, I didn't even know it was coming through then. So.
Right. There's a bunch of them. So, you know, you could.
Yeah. I mean, so really, it could be ending at any time.
True.
You know, if you base it on just that, I'm saying.
Right. So what were the, was there another choice or no?
I believe that's all that I remember hearing, but.
No, you know, I mean, in your poll.
Yes, that's all I put because that's all the comments I could remember that, you know, really struck me as interesting that, you know, these are like real people that.
All right. Well, I mean, if you want to vote in that one, I mean, if you don't, I don't blame you, but. You know, if you do want to vote in that one, you can go to our Facebook page and you'll see it there.
Well, also, you can add your own comment or, you know, thought. Like, if you have another thought of what that was, put there.
That's true. You can add your own.
Yeah. So we're, you know, all about that. So.
Okay. So there's one other thing that I did recently. Oh, I started a Twitter account for Backstory. So you might see something popping up on there. I haven't written anything yet for it, but, you know, I'm hoping to use it in the near future. And
well, I did find you finally on there.
Oh, you did? Wow, there you go.
Finally.
So, all right, I got one follower.
That's right. I can vouch for that. You are official.
All right. Well, I'm on my, you know, we're on our way. So
yeah. And, you know, Ghana, we can just do a little shout out here.
Yeah.
Because they're starting season 12 with them in the number 2 position. So thank you, Ghana, again.
They're really kicking butt. You know, really showed up England and Australia.
In Canada,
so, to beat out all of them for second place, which is, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah. So, you know, all these countries got to, like, step up a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, this is going to be really exciting. I can't wait to talk to Cammie and, you know, just hear all about what it was like to be a young child star and, you know, what's been going on in life since.
Yeah. So do you know if she continued acting or?
No, that's one of the questions I have is, you know, like, was that enough? Like, you know, since she started at such a young age, I'm sure she hadn't given a lot of thought to, you know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? So,
yeah, because she couldn't have been that old when the Waltons ended. I mean,
no, because she was, you know, really little when they started. So it's in a, you know, in that way, it would be a lot different for her than it was for, you know, when we had talked to Mary Ellen, just because the age difference. So I'll be curious to see if acting, you know, felt like a career choice at that point.
All right. Well, let's talk to her and find out.
All right. Let's do it. Cammie, I want to welcome you to Backstory Sessions. It's such an honor to have you.
Well, it's very nice of you to invite me. It's fun to be here.
Well, you know, you were quite young on the Waltons. So was that your first acting role or how did that come to be?
It came to be pretty accidentally. The first acting role I had was on The Homecoming, which was the movie that then turned into The Waltons. And that happened, my mom had taken me into the city. We lived about an hour out of Hollywood. And she brought my brother and I in for just like a family photograph. And I was very small for my age and I had lots of red hair and I was not remotely shy. I talked up a storm. And I think the photographer told her she could do commercial work because she's comfortable in front of a camera and she's not shy and she's small for her age. And those are all good things. And my mom thought, oh, gracious me, I'm busy. I've got two small children and a full-time job and I'm not interested in anything that would complicate our life. But apparently I nagged her until she sent my photograph into the agent he'd recommended. And then the agent said, as soon as she turned six, we'll send her on auditions. And the agent began, you know, making my mom drag me all the way up to town for these auditions. And my mom thought, oh, I'm not doing this for very long. This is exhausting and ridiculous. Before she could give up, within the first couple of weeks, I was cast on The Homecoming.
Wow. Did you have a good experience with that?
I did very much so. I think we were really fortunate. The director for that movie was Fielder Cook, and he was kind of known for working well with children. And he was surprised to hear that I'd never acted before, and my mom was concerned that I might mess up because I was kind of wild when I was little. I had loads of energy and not a lot of attention span. And she thought, oh, goodness, you know, she won't learn her lines or she'll get distracted by a cow or she'll mess up. And so she proposed acting lessons, and Fielder Cook said, no, goodness, no, she's perfect just how she is. She's natural. Leave her alone. And then he just did a beautiful job kind of coaching me and having – my mom said he'd pick me up. He was quite a tall man. He'd take me over to the corner of the soundstage, and then he'd talk to me really intently, and then I'd talk right back to him really intently, and we'd go back and forth for a while, and then he'd bring me on set, put me down, and she said, he did everything perfectly. She goes, I don't know how he did it. Seeing as she couldn't get me to reliably put my socks on in the morning. But he was able to kind of engage my imagination, I think. And I was excited that so many people were willing to play an elaborate game of pretend.
So then after The Homecoming, and this becomes a series, you know, is your mom hesitant to sign up for the long term? Or is she convinced after the movie that, yes, this is a good movie?
My parents were very hesitant. The standard contract for, you know, an actor going into a series, especially an actor with, you know, no credits or fame, is a 6-year deal. And that's what they gave all the kids, a 6-year contract. And my mom was horrified. My mom and dad thought, we don't know what she wants to do day after tomorrow, much less in 6 years. But my dad had a fraternity brother who was a producer. And so they called Barney, and Barney said, oh, don't worry. It's not going to go for 6 years. It'll be 13 weeks and they'll be done. Don't worry about it. And besides, he said, what, they're going to make a 7-year-old stick to her contract? Like, how are they going to do that? She's a little tiny kid. So they felt reassured and signed the contract. And fortunately, I really enjoyed the work, so it was never a problem.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is quite the difference, like, of, you know, being 6'7" up to 12, 13, you know, that is, you know, an interest that you have at that early age certainly may not be something you would have as a teenager.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I think for me, I was certainly more self-conscious playing as a 12 or 13-year-old. Like, it was when I watched my performances from when I'm 6 and 7, I'm being natural. I'm not too worried about how it's going. And then when I watch me when I'm a little bit older, I start to see the embarrassment or the little bit of discomfort or the awkwardness. I think fortunately when you're in puberty, you are embarrassed and awkward, so that kind of worked. But I still love the process. I liked being with the crew. I liked going to school on the set. It was fun having, you know, 7 older brothers and sisters. And so it was, yeah, I liked the process of working a whole lot.
Did you have a good work ethic? Like, is that something that's intrinsic to you?
Do I have a good work ethic? I am a queen procrastinator. I wouldn't like describe myself as having the number one best work ethic. But on the other hand, I love being part of a team, and I wanted everyone to be satisfied with the work I did. So I worked because, you know, making a television series, you build such tight relationships with crew members and directors and your castmates that you don't want to let them down. You don't want to make them late for lunch, right? You don't want to make the scene go over and over and over again because you're making a mistake. And I think, too, when you're little, they kind of expect you at first to make a mistake because you're a child. And then when you do a good job, there's a lot of praise and surprise. So I think that kind of, that sense of being competent kind of kept me going and kept me motivated.
So you mentioned school on the set. Were you ever in traditional school?
Yeah, our shooting season went from, usually it's like June to March or April. So we would always be enrolled in a school, in a traditional school. And then come spring, we all go back to our regular schools for a couple months until until the shooting season started up again in the summer. So I was always in school for a couple of months in the spring.
So what was that experience like for you? Were you able to be involved? Were you in acting or any specific hobbies or interests in school for that 2 months?
Mostly it was just school. I think the transition could be difficult, especially if it were a new school. Like the first time I went to my elementary or the first time I went to the middle school, that was always a big transition of like finding your friends and like joining in the middle of the year is difficult. It got easier as I got older because, you know, then you're old enough to be on the phone, right? So you call your friends when you're not there and get the gossip and find out what's going on. So that got easier as I moved into like high school and started to have a social life that would continue when I wasn't, when I was working, that was from school. I think that academically it was not that hard. I was fortunate to have some really good on-set studio teachers. And I think too, you know, I'm a big reader just naturally. So academics tend to be okay for me. There was always like a week or so where you just would fail everything because you just showed up and you just hadn't had the instruction because it was impossible to have it be perfectly aligned when you weren't there. And then you'd kind of get your feet and figure out, you know, the new unit would start and you'd be fine.
What did the friends or classmates, you know, were they impressed that you were on the Waltons or?
I think it's something you learn to navigate because typically, initially, there's this like, oh, she's on television. And maybe the first few people who come spend time with you might be more primarily interested in you as somebody who's on television. But over time, as you spend time with people, you know, they begin to figure out who you are and what your personality is and what things you're passionate about and what's annoying about you and, you know, your whole package. And you get to know your classmates, too, and begin to kind of figure out, okay, this person won't stop asking me questions about the Waltons. So I think they're mostly interested in me because I'm on television. Whereas this person wants to talk about the same music I like and they want to go to the movie I want to go to about the same books. And okay, so this person's a friend. I'm that person I'm going to spend less time with because I'm tired of answering their questions about the Waltons, right? So you always expect an initial kind of disorientation as people process, whoa, this person's on television. And then it calms down and you begin to just have a relationship person to person.
So what was annoying about you?
Oh, what's annoying about me? Oh, are you going to answer that question when I finish answering it?
I got a whole list of things.
Let's see what's annoying about me when I was a teenager. I would say I had very rigid opinions about certain things, like what a good movie was or what a good band was. There were definitely bands when I was in, I'm sort of a snob, I think. And I probably talk too much. That's been a lifelong trait. And sometimes I can be a little direct, especially I think rolling in from an acting experience. You aren't as vested in all the social drama as everybody else is.
Yeah.
Because you're used to working with grownups. So I think sometimes I would deliver critical feedback that they might not have wanted to hear.
Oh, that's on my list too. So, I mean, I would think even despite these annoyances that you remained quite grounded. You know, a lot of child stars go a different path and seems like they have a hard time transitioning into, you know, a successful, whether it be still in the field of acting or even just in life. You know, you see a lot of them that go down a dark path, but that didn't seem to really happen to you. So what do you attribute that to?
Well, I think I had so many advantages. One advantage would be two parents who really didn't care if I went back to work or not. So if I started to complain about, you know, oh, so boring today or oh, so annoying today, they would say, don't go in tomorrow. Because their feeling was life would be so much simpler if we didn't have this kid with a job. And, you know, so they weren't dependent on my acting either for like ego reasons or for financial reasons. So there was no pressure on me to go to work. So I think that's key. I think the fact that I was on a show that had a really nice group of people and that I wasn't the only kid, there was a bunch of kids. So we kind of, you know, we had each other wherever we went and whatever we did. And then as the baby, I was protected and sheltered by both my TV siblings and also by crew members. There were crew members who kind of would semi-adopt me and keep an eye. So those things. I think, too, it was a different time period. There was no 24-hour news cycle. So people weren't, there was no social media. So we were able to do dumb things as teenagers that are, you know, typical dumb teenager things. And there was nobody with a camera taking pictures of us.
Right. Does it seem like 50 years ago?
Oh, golly, I don't know. Like, it doesn't on the face of it. But then if I stop and I go, okay, since the show ended, like I went to college and I traveled in Europe and I met my husband and, oh, yeah, I worked at like a travel agent for a while. And, oh, yeah, and then I you know, was assistant manager of that restaurant. I had that experience. And oh yeah, and then I started a school, and then I started another school, and then I had 2 kids. All right, we lived in, like, when I add up all the stuff that happened, then I'm going, gosh, it must be 50 years.
Yeah. Well, so you've done a lot of different things. What inspired you to branch out into other fields after the Waltons?
I think I was fortunate because the show ended, I was 16. We did the movies of the week. NBC had 3 2-hour movies they did. So I had a little mini season after we were canceled. And then I was almost ready for college. So it felt like a kind of natural child to adult transition. I didn't have a burning desire to keep acting. And when I auditioned, it all felt a bit silly to me because it's different auditioning as a 16, 17-year-old than as a 6-year-old, right? As a 16, 17-year-old, there's a lot more politics and you know, competitiveness and, you know, weird feelings. And I was not interested in any of that. So I went off to college and it would never, like when people would say, are you going to study, you know, acting? I think, what do you study? Because I've been doing it. I mean, you learn lines, hit mark, clear for key light. What do you study? And I grew up to understand that there's a lot to study and it's actually really fascinating. But as a 16-year-old, it didn't seem like a very complex subject. So I studied other things and then kind of wanted to explore more of the United States and live in different places. And I liked to teach. So it kind of naturally took me into education.
Well, let's talk about that. Education, you've spent a good part of your journey has been in that field. So what is it about teaching that or education that fascinates you?
I always tell when I was in the classroom and eventually my students would figure out that I'd been on television and then they'd be like, why are you here, Miss Cotler? And I'd always tell them, because you guys are never boring. I mean, it can be hard. It can be frustrating. It can be extraordinary, but it's never dull. And acting on television is dull because you spend most of your time standing around waiting and very little time actually acting. So I think there's that. It's not boring. I think I was fortunate to have a really wonderful education, and I feel like everybody deserves that. I think there's no better high than when you watch a child get something, when they have that aha moment. And then education is very collaborative, much like making a TV series. You know, it takes everybody's good work to make it successful. So if you've got some good teachers, but the administrators are terrible, it doesn't work. Or if you have good administrators, but teachers are weak, or if the playground staff is not on board with the program, you know, in any part of the organization, if it's not mission aligned, you don't have the right experience for kids. So I think that's also something that probably attracted me to education.
Was that hard to navigate? Because I would think in most situations, there's one segment that's not on board or is difficult from, you know, that kind of wants to hold back the progress of the whole. So, you know, how do you approach in education and acting, like in everything, team building?
I think you just have to dedicate time to it and you have to do it intentionally. So we were fortunate when we started the first Environmental Charter Middle School, which was the second school I was involved with helping to open. We adopted a program that really explicitly looked at what are the activities you do with a group of students in a classroom to make them into a community, to make them feel safe with each other, to make them recognize like which gifts each individual is bringing, to make them have the skills they need to navigate, you know, disagreements and conflict. And it was a beautiful program. And we implemented it with the staff too, because we thought, well, if we're going to do it in the classroom, then we should do it with all the grownups. And that step was a really helpful step in making sure that we were on the same page. And it's never perfect, right? But if you're always moving in that direction, then you start to have success. And you know, people on the whole get into education because they want kids to have wonderful experiences. And that's true from you know, the playground supervisor to the principal. If they don't get into it for the money, right? So there has to be, there's some other reason. And usually that reason has to do with their values and things that are important to them and what they want for kids. So I think it's about finding the connections between each of the individuals, because they all have that shared desire, right, for a positive experience for students. And then it's just about getting everybody's vision of what that positive experience is aligned enough that everybody's moving in the same direction.
What, I'm curious, what grade did you teach?
My credential was high school.
Oh.
And then I ended up as a K-8 principal.
Oh, wow. The drama in high school, I can imagine what that's like.
Yeah, it's worse in middle school, I think. Because I was a middle school principal, too. Mm-hmm. High school, there's always some you know, social complications in high school. But I think the peak of social complications is middle school.
Yeah, that's probably true. You and Kat have that in common. She was a English and drama teacher for many years.
Oh, really?
Yes. Maybe that's why we have similar annoying.
My very first teaching job, I was an English teacher, and then they also gave me like two sections of drama because they thought I was an expert. And I was the furthest thing from an expert. Because, you know, when you're teaching drama in high school, you do everything. Like your makeup and your costumes and your props and your lighting and
writing and, yeah.
Right. And because I'd been working, I hadn't been at school to take middle or high school drama. So I had no idea. But again, I was fortunate. Mary, who played Erin on The Waltons, had done some had been acting coach. And so I just called her and said, help me, I have to teach drama. And she said, Viola Spolin, get this book by Viola Spolin. And then I just did. And then I just pretended. I would read the book and I'd come in and say, in the theater, we blah, blah, blah.
Fake it till you make it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So The Waltons takes place in what? It's the 20s, I believe. Is that correct?
You're a little early. The begins in 1933.
Okay, I'm sorry. So how do you think you would fare as a teenager in that time period? Or a child in that time period? Do you think you would have, like, you know? We asked this, we were talking to Karen Grassley last week, and asked her how she would have done as a pioneer woman, and she said I would have, you know, would have been dead in a couple years.
Yeah. No, it's especially like that story, because I used to love reading the Little House books. Mm-hmm. And as looking at them again as a grown-up, you realize, what is Pa doing? He's just dragging poor Ma and those two and those little girls all across the nation for some weird, like, he's driven by something, but it doesn't appear to be their best interest. No, poor Ma, she had a terrible, terrible, challenging time.
Yeah.
I think Elizabeth as a child in the 30s was in a pretty good situation. She had lots of older brothers and sisters, was living in a place where the family could be self-sufficient enough, right? That they were poor, but they were not going to starve because they could rely on hunting and fishing and their garden and the milk cow. So they didn't really have to deal with the perils that the Great Depression really brought on so many families.
Right.
So, and then plus when you're a child, you are just protected. So I think it would be a pretty idyllic childhood. I think it would be harder as you became a teen and the kind of expectations. When we did the reunion shows, they were like, okay, Elizabeth is going to come back and she's going to have a master's degree in botany. I thought, okay, like, what could she do with a master's degree in botany? And I looked on the internet at some university, like, yearbooks, right? Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out, like, what would she look like if she was a college student in 1950? Like, what would that be like? And basically what it showed me was, you know, women were not on the whole getting master's degrees in botany. The graduate classes were almost all men. So I think that's the part, that's where it would have started to be difficult.
Yeah.
Is just the limitations legally and societally on what women could acceptably do.
All right, Kat, what do you got? What else you got?
Yeah, so I'm curious about the relationships on the set. Like, there were a lot of children there, and that seems like different from your family. So did you get along? Like, was it happy children, you know, sibling relationship, or was it just like the typical, you know, fighting with each other that siblings do? What was it like?
I think it was probably pretty typical. You're right. At home, I had one little brother, so I was used to being the eldest. And on the set, I had all these older brothers and sisters. And so there were people to play with, but there were also people who teased me, and I would feel left out sometimes. So I think it was very similar to a real family. But we recently, my daughter had me do some videos for like a YouTube channel because she wanted to learn to edit. So one of the things she had me do was interview my mom. And I asked my mom, like, did you ever worry about me? Because you kind of like just dropped me off in all these situations. Like on the weekends, we would do telethons or we would do parades. And she would just put me on a float, you know, and pick me up 3 hours later at the other end of the parade route. And she said, right. And she said, I never worried because you had all the other kids. You know, I'd hand you to John Walmsley or I'd hand you to Mary and they would look out for you. And that's very true. They absolutely looked out to me to the point where they would not tell me about things they had done when they were younger.
Who were you closest to on the set?
It kind of shifted. So when we were very little, David, who played Jim Bob, and I played together. So we played, you know, hide and go seek, and we played tag, and we could play with the seesaw or if the mule was there. So we just played like children. And then as David got a little bit older, then he wasn't interested in you know, hide and seek anymore. And then I just kind of shifted my attention to Mary, who played Erin, because she was this very vivacious teenager and she told funny stories. And I just tagged along and hung on her every word. So that was like the childhood part. And then now as adults, you know, we often will travel together. We got together recently and thought, well, do we want to do Walton events and what kind of Walton events do we want to do? And we decided, yeah, let's a couple times a year, let's all travel to a different part of the country. If we can find somebody to host an event so that fans can come out and meet us and ask us questions, then we'll do all that. And then we'll come in a couple days early so that we can just hang out with each other. And we do. We'll rent a house together and then go out to dinner and go to the local museum and explore the countryside. And then do on the Saturday and Sunday, do Walton fan event. And then all head home for our respective lives.
So if you had to give out some awards, who was the funniest of the
six? Eric is the funniest. So Eric played Ben. And you can always count on Eric to make a joke. It's not always appropriate. but Eric was the one who would crack, you know, when we were feeling tense or things were getting hard, Eric would say something ridiculous to get everybody laughing.
Okay. Who was the smartest?
Well,
like John Boy, you know, seems to be academic and all of that on the show.
On the show. So
that way, like in real life.
Richard is sophisticated, right? So Richard grew up in Manhattan. I think, you know, he was writing poetry as like a 17, 18 year old boy. He studied Chinese when he was in college. His parents were dancers with City Ballet. So Richard was very sophisticated and, you know, educated in that way too, and which goes on. You know, Richard's worked with, he's created roles for David Mamet. You know, he's worked with some of the greatest theater folks available. So Richard is smart in that kind of sophisticated, cultured way.
Yeah.
John Walmsley is smart as a gifted musician, right? Mm-hmm. Like John can, he just teaches himself instruments, and then he's also got that mindset to keep practicing forever. So that's John Walmsley's smart. He also writes pretty well.
Well, who had the best fashion sense?
Fashion sense.
So what did you, before you even answer that, like, what did you think of the fashion? Like, your costumes were, I would imagine, quite different than what you wore.
Normally wore. Yeah. Well, I have almost no fashion sense. Like, I don't even notice what anybody wears. So, I always joke, I married a visual artist because I don't actually see anything. So I had to, like, bring it in as, like, an outside skill. Who dresses? I mean, Leslie, who played Cindy Walton, Ben's wife, she always has the biggest suitcase. And wow. She does have fabulous outfits all the time. I can't dress myself. There were different instances, like Judy, who played Mary Ellen, took me shopping when I was a teenager to try to teach me how to wear clothes. Mary took me shopping to try to teach me how to wear clothes. So either of them have some idea how to dress for certain. But I don't have any.
So what's it like now when you get together as adults? Do you, like, use some of the lines with each other from the show? Do they carry over?
No. But I think it's important to remember, right? Like people see the episodes. So they see the, like, 50 minutes of television. And behind that 50 minutes of television is 6.5 days of filming.
Yeah.
So what we...
That doesn't make it to what we see.
Well, and it's just, it's the time in between. It's the time rehearsing. It's the time waiting. It's the time while they're setting the lights. And the things that we say are catchphrases from behind the scenes, right? So, like, the last time we got together for dinner, somebody said, "What about the chickens, Harry?" Which makes us all laugh, and it's hilarious because there was some episode where a chicken had to, like, do something on camera, and the prop man, Leon, was in charge of the chicken, and Harry Harris was the director, and Harry Harris was, like, pulling his hair out because the chicken wouldn't do what he was supposed to do when they were losing the light. And at some point in time, you know, Leon Schotter said, "Harry, what about the chicken?" And that became a thing that stuck in all of our minds. So anytime anybody says it, we all laugh. So we have, like, all these inside jokes and things that we remember, but it's not the dialogue.
Yeah. Well, that is very cool to have that. Does it seem like you gain siblings for life? Is it that kind of bond?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. How neat that must be. And especially to go from, like, having, you are the oldest, you know, and then getting to experience being the youngest. That's like,
cool. It's true. Anytime, you know, sometimes on magazines, they'll have, like, treats. Take this quiz to find out if you're the youngest or the oldest in your family, that kind of thing. I have traits of both.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely relate to being the baby. I experience that. And I absolutely relate to being the eldest because I experience that too.
Wow. So these events with the fans, what's it like? What's the response like from the fans?
The response is always extraordinary. I mean, to me, that's the most astonishing thing, is that it's 50 years later. And I have, you know, I have families, like, three generations of families come up and talk about watching the Waltons, or people who'd never watched the show in the 70s, and then during the pandemic, during the lockdown, they found themselves watching it on reruns because it was so comforting. Yeah, that's the remarkable part, is that folks still watch the show. They still have a real connection to it. I think the universal themes that the writers brought out, and the real relationships that we were, you know, using, interacting, have made the show still connect to people this much later. And then at events, you know, people come and they'll line up to, like, have a quick chat or buy a photograph or get an autograph. And then we usually have a breakfast and a dinner, and then we answer questions and share stories. And yeah, it's, I mean, the fans always know the show better than we do. Sometimes there'll be a trivia competition and we always lose.
How does that feel?
It's not remotely surprising. We know we're going to lose.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the fans enjoy that too, to get to, you know, like, be so dedicated that they know everything and you've got your own following all these years later. That's amazing. And so I hear that you make Christmas tree ornaments with dolphins.
I do. When we started doing the fan events, Mary, who played Erin, has written a book, and Judy and John, Judy's a beautiful singer, and Judy played Mary Ellen, and John Walmsley is a singer and a guitar player, so they have CDs. And I didn't really have anything except for photographs. So my daughter and I sat down and thought, well, what can we make? What would be something fun to make that would be Walton-y, but it wouldn't be too difficult because I have a short attention span. I'm a little bit flaky. But that we could successfully execute on without disappointing anybody or messing it up. And we decided on making Christmas ornaments. And we took images from the show, and my husband is an artist, and he was able to simplify them on the computer so we could make stamps. And then we got some sort of sepia-colored ink, and we sit in front of the telly and watch stupid television and stamp out these little wooden Christmas ornaments, and they're round and flat and relatively easy to nail, and they look very Walton-y. So it's something affordable and festive and easy, not too hard for us to do, and people have been really responsive. It's been much more successful than we certainly anticipated.
So what's your daughter, has she watched the Waltons, all of the whole series? And
oh, goodness, no. I think she's maybe seen one or two episodes. She's never been interested in watching it. She thinks it's very odd. She'll tell me, it's you, but it's not you.
Yeah.
For most of our kids, like the next generation down, they think of the Waltons as being when we all get together,
yeah,
rather than the show. Like, they've probably each seen one or two episodes and thought it was weird because those are their parents acting as children.
Well, I think that's an interesting thing that you said, you know, that your daughter said, is like, it's you, but it's not you.
Yeah.
Do you feel that way when you watch?
I think yes, because often I can't even remember what I'm doing. Like I'll watch an episode and I'll think, there was a pony, I don't remember a pony, or I don't remember carrying a raccoon. You think I would remember carrying a raccoon? That's really weird. So when I see the episodes, I'm just always shocked at stuff that I don't remember doing that I think I would remember doing. And I also wonder there's one episode, I don't remember which one it was, but for some reason the sheriff has come and all the Walton children have gathered in front of the house to listen to the sheriff talk. And I must be seven. For some reason, I just turn completely upside down. I'm just standing there and I just start to lean until my head is hanging over. And I'm like, what am I doing? And I was just, you know, whatever, I'm seven. Yeah, that's shocking.
Well, what is next for you?
Oh, next is, I mean, I'm mostly retired, so I do some educational consulting, helping principals or helping folks who are founding schools. And a couple of times a year, we get together to do a Walton event. We've got one coming up in May. And where are we going? We are going to Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
We're going to be just outside Nashville in Bon Aqua, which is, I guess, where Johnny Cash used to have a recording studio on a farm, mm-hmm. and they kind of turned it into a storytelling museum. And we're going to be there on a Saturday and Sunday and meeting folks. And, you know, there's a breakfast event. And I usually post about it on my Facebook page. And then also I'll put information on my website, which is cammycotler.com. So whenever there's an event in the new part of the country, I usually try to put information up there so folks can plan ahead. And then traveling too, and kind of enjoying not having a full-time job anymore.
Where's your, I mean, what kind of places do you like to go? Are you like a beach person or history, that kind of thing?
Well, as a redhead, the beach is always hard for me.
Right.
Because yeah. Just sunburn. Yeah. But my husband and I just got back. We did a road trip and we went to Sedona and we went to Monument Valley and visited some friends in Arizona and did Bryce Canyon and Zion. So we like to see, you know, nature. We also like history. My husband's English, so we love going to Europe and doing the old buildings thing. Yeah, I like going to new places, and I'm really open to almost anything.
Have you been to Nashville before?
Yeah, we did an event in Mayfield, Kentucky, I think last fall. Mm-hmm. And so before we went to Kentucky, we all met up in Nashville for a couple of days. So we're excited to go back to that town.
Yeah.
It's fun there.
Yeah. good fun and could be bad fun.
Well, you know, we kind of keep our eye on each other so we don't get into too much trouble.
Yeah.
You know, like the Waltons, just a little bit of the recipe and so.
I was curious, when you met your husband, did he know that you were on TV before?
No, he's just a little bit older than me. So mm-hmm. he was kind of a teen when the Waltons came out. So he did not watch it.
Okay. I can imagine what that conversation was like. Yeah, I used to be on TV. No, you weren't.
I got recognized. We were out, I forget where we were at a park somewhere in London. And there was a field trip of girls' school. And they were probably, you know, 13, 14. And I looked up and I thought, uh-oh, I think they just recognized me. And that, you know, it's fine to be recognized by three or four people, but when they're like 75 people all together, then that's a little more daunting. And I looked to my husband, I'm like, we have to go. And he's like, what? I go, those girls just recognized me. It's going to spread like wildfire. We have to get out of here. And he's like, huh? No, no, it's urgent. Like, let's go.
He probably thought you were crazy. Like, recognize you? What are you talking about? All
right, recognize what?
Yeah. One more question, Kat, and then we'll let Cammie go.
All right. So as you look back over, you know, your journey to this point, what did you learn from the Waltons' experience that has carried through the rest of your journey so far?
Oh, golly, I learned so much. I think I learned to appreciate all different kinds of people. Because I was on the show, I met all my castmates who all had very different lives, were coming from very different places. And then I met all the crew members who also came from, you know, all over the world. And I think it gave me a chance as a child to just be exposed to kind of the rich diversity of humans and learn to appreciate that you might not agree with somebody, but that doesn't mean that you can't work effectively together and that you can't learn from each other. And I know when I'm on Facebook, I always tell folks who follow me, they're like, the rule is we can't put each other down. So we can talk, you all can talk about anything. That like it's like not there's no politics, no religion rule. You can talk about everything that's interesting, but the minute you put somebody down, you're going to have to delete that comment and say it in a better way, because the important thing is that we should be able to talk to each other, and we all have way more in common than we don't have in common. And on the Facebook page, the thing everybody has in common is they like the Waltons. And one of the recurring themes of the Waltons was that you're just always gracious with people. They might be different than you. You might not understand them at first, but there's a shared humanity in it. And usually it can be discovered by the end of an hour-long episode.
Well, that's a very nice lesson. You know, I wish everyone could learn that.
Me too.
All right, Cammie, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time. And, you know, we hope that you'll come back and talk to us again sometime.
Well, thank you for thinking up all those questions. And I noticed from, I think, Kat's email address that she writes plays.
Yes, I do.
I would love to see what kind of plays you write. That sounds really cool.
Oh, yay. Well, as of recent, I have started a murder mystery dinner theater, you know, so there's a mobile dinner theater. So we write plays for that type of activity. But, you know, my heart of writing is usually for things that can affect change of some type. So I'm usually addressing some issue that's important to me through my writing.
Interesting.
That matter to me.
And she likes to kill people off. Someone always dies in one of her plays.
Probably going to die. So the murder mystery works out for that. But,
it's the beauty of storytelling, right? Anything can happen. You can make anything happen.
Well, you would appreciate this. Our last one, Murder on the Mountain, you know, kind of like Walton's Mountain. But the one character, you know, they all have fantasies. He would be like the Walton that no one liked. So they would all have fantasies about killing him in some way. But they never would, of course. But so I had to come up with a way. And I'm like, so like, anti-violence and, you know, all those things. So I'm like, you know, I never write things like this. What am I going to do? So I decided, because there's a cooler, they're all there on the mountain to watch the eclipse. So I have a unicorn appear, just like magically appear, and he's getting in the cooler, and the unicorn sits down on the cooler and
excellent.
And so this past Sunday when it was performed, the actor's sister was in the audience, and she was like, it really did it, you know, it made the pop, and it was like she was like so afraid that, you know, something had gone wrong,
and anymore. So you traumatized the audience.
Yes. So, you know, add that to my list of annoying.
Well, we did that once. There was one of Walton event we did where they did a like a murder mystery dinner where we each of the cast members was a different character. Well, we were playing ourselves ostensibly, and one of our we killed the promoter. That was the setup, that the promoter had been murdered, and each of us had a motive. And it was, I thought it was enormous fun.
You know, I think it's sort of like the Waltons was comfort. I think murder mysteries are like, you know, they're entertaining and they're so like away from reality. I mean, of course, people know, you know, no one's really killed and all of that. It's just like a break from all the bad things, and you just get to come together and have some fun. And I think that's the great thing of that type of theater.
Well, yeah, the genre's, it's predictable enough, right? That it's kind of comforting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And people love to laugh, you know? I mean, yeah. And also to be sleuths. I think social media has been good for that. You know, people are always like looking for clues of whatever conspiracy thing
that oh golly. Well, I think, you know, the one thing is, as I look at my retirement stretching ahead of me, I'm like, okay, I like to be in front of groups, whether it's a group of parents I'm explaining a new policy to, or it's a group of students, or it's Walton fans where we're answering questions or explaining how the show was made. So I'm like, oh, you have to figure out a way to like build that in. So then I always have an opportunity to just, well, like I say, I like to talk, so I can't wear out my own family. I have to find fresh people to talk to.
Well, I can always find you bunches of them. So, you know, maybe Walton's will come to Kentucky, and this side of Kentucky, we're actually very closer to like the Smoky Mountains and Gallenberg
too. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, to that side. So
well, keep us in mind if you stumble across an event or a promoter who wants to bring us out, you know, just reach back, and I'll see if we can all do it.
Yeah, and maybe, like, you know, we could decapitate you with the cooler.
I am so down.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming and being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.